out for a couple weeks, all right? So you got to give me a break. All right, there we go. You guys doing good? Okay, all right. Good to see you. Hey, just want to take a moment. Just want to say thank you to all of you guys who are praying for all of us from Tiffin who were on that trip to Israel a few weeks ago. We had a blast, learned a whole bunch of stuff. You guys will be hearing about it and probably sick of hearing about it over the next few months or so, as it will probably get brought up all the time, because in a lot of these things that we're talking about in the Bible, we got to see with our own eyes. So just pretty cool. But just want to say thank you for praying for that. Also want to say thank you to all you vets out there. Appreciate your sacrifice and the time that you put in to serving our country and fighting for what our country stands for. And so just want to say thank you to you as well. For me, back in the day, when I was in elementary school, I forget exactly what grade, me and a bunch of friends of mine, we went on a week-long camping trip in the mountains of Pennsylvania, actually with a couple of some guys from our church. And one thing when we got there that they drilled into our heads was they said, don't go off by yourself, right? Don't go walking by yourself. Don't go over there by yourself. Don't go walking through the woods by yourself or whatever, especially at night, because the area that we were staying in, that we were camping in, was actually known for their like many, many, many black bears. And so they're like, don't do that. In fact, I think if I remember correctly that someone had just been attacked by a bear recently in that area. And so they made this like a really, really, really big deal to all of us kids. And I remember one night, I wake up, I'm laying, I'm in my sleeping bag in the tent with a bunch of my friends, and I had to pee so bad, okay? Like, I'm sitting there, I probably had a Mountain Dew right before I went to bed because I was an idiot, you know, that type of thing, and I was, like, laying there, and I'm, like, in agony because I'm, like, man, I cannot go outside because the bears are out there, you know, and so I can't, and it's dark, so I gotta wait till morning, and so that's what I decided to do. I decided to wait, but it got worse and worse, and I was in pain, and I think it was like, you know, readjusting like my insides, like it was just terrible, and apparently I was moving around a lot, because one of the leaders, one of these guys from several tents away, he had his own tent, he kind of yells out in the middle of the night, he's like, who is making all that noise? And I'm like, I don't think I'm making any noise. And then he's like, whoever you are, it sounds like you're running laps in your tent. All right, that was me, like, you know, trying to hold it in. Like, you guys have done that before. You know how your kid, you can tell your kids got to go because that's what they're doing. And so I'm like, yeah, I guess that might be me. It's Zach over here. And he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I really, really, really got to go to the bathroom. And he was like, then go. What are you waiting for? And I'm like, I thought we weren't supposed to go out there. And I'll be honest with you, I don't even think that guy even cared at that moment whether I got mauled by a bear or not. He was like, just get out there. Go with the bears. I'm like, okay. And I remember unzipping the tent, you know, and I walk out. And the moment you walk out, like, you could just hear more stuff, you know. It's not like your friend snoring next to you. All of a sudden, you can, like, hear the sounds of the night, like, of the wilderness or whatever you want to call it, you know. And I'm just like, I could hear, like, there's noises out there. And as I'm walking to the bathroom, which is, like, a half a mile away, you know, down this trail, and, you know, I could hear every stick that cracked. I'm like, bear, you know, what was that, you know, I'm like looking, I got my, you know, this was back in the 90s, so I got, you know, I don't got the LED flashlights, I got the flashlights that dimmed as the batteries went out, you know what I mean, and so I'm like, dang, should have put new batteries in this thing as I'm walking through, and I just remember literally being scared to death, and I probably made it like, I don't know, 10 yards, I'm like, I'm good right here, and I just went there, and that's how us guys do. So, it's funny. I remember standing there in the middle of the night. I remember this vividly as a kid, and I'm just like, I don't want to die. You know, I'm too young to die. This is not how I want to go. You know, I don't want to go doing this. And so it was just one of those things. We fear a lot of things. Like we all do, in different scenarios in our life. I mean, we've talked about that over the last few weeks. I mean, we fear rejection, we fear embarrassment, we fear some of us getting older, all right? We fear our financial problems, we fear our future because we don't know what that's gonna look like. We fear failure. Mike talked about that last week, and fearing failure, it just kind of halts us. Like it stops us in our tracks, it keeps us many times from moving forward the way that we need to move forward. And because of that, we try to live our lives as careful as we possibly can and as safe as we possibly can. And I got this thing like against safety in general. This isn't even in my notes. This is just extra for you. Mike and I was just telling him about this just a few weeks ago. We're like, the whole idea of safety, we understand, is an illusion, right? What is safe? You know, like, define safe. It's even hard to define safe because, you know, our hearts could give out any moment. Like, you know, every beat is a gift. And, you know, is that safe? I don't know. It doesn't feel real safe to me. But this whole idea of safety, we understand that God never, ever, ever promises us a safe life. Do you realize that? All right. I looked for it. I couldn't find it. It's just not there. All right. God never promises us a safe life. And so for me, I've stopped praying, like, God, keep us safe, keep my kids safe, stuff like that, because safety, who cares if we're safe or not? What I've started asking God is, like, instead, I'm like, God, could you please protect me? All right, protect my kids, protect this. So some of you guys, you know, as you guys fill out that, like, communication card and you write your prayer request on the back and you say safe travels or whatever, I'll be honest with you, I don't pray for your safe travels. I pray that God would protect you. I don't know, because that's what's in the Bible, all right? So that's just me, and I'll get off that for a second. Mike was like, I don't know about that, but that's what I think, and so I think that's right. Anyway, but here's the deal. Like, we try to live our lives as safe, whatever that means, as we can. We parents, think about us as parents. What do we tell our kids all the time? Be safe. Be careful. Have a good day. Be careful out there. You know, what we don't do is probably, we don't tell our kids the things that our kids probably need to hear. Instead of, like, be safe and be careful and be cautious or whatever, really we should be telling them, hey, be bold. Be brave. Be courageous, but we don't do that. See, our lives literally revolve around our fears. And one fear that I think we all struggle with, some of us a lot, some of us a little, is death, right? Or to die. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, think about it. Some of us in here, you're just maybe checking church out for the first time, you know, or just you're kind of new here or new to church in general. And so for you, you're just like, man, I don't even exactly know what happens when I die. You don't even think about it all that much. It's just like, oh yeah, okay, you know, death, you know, try not to think about that. But if you dug down deep within you, it's like, man, I don't know what happens. Like, I fear death because I don't know what's, like, what's right on the other side of the line of as soon as I die. What's that going to look like? Is it good? Is it bad? I'm not sure. All right, or some of us in here, like, or all of us in here, we don't know when it's going to happen. We don't know how it's going to happen. We don't know if it's going to hurt. You know, does it hurt? Does it not hurt? Like, is this, you know, is it going to be good? Is it horrible? Is it long? Is it short? Like, we don't know any of these things. There's just a lot of unknowns when it comes to our death. But the reality is, and look at me real quick, all right, the reality is, assuming Jesus doesn't come back, all right, in our lifetime, the reality is you will die. You're going to die. I'm going to die. It's just true. Maybe 70 years from now, maybe within the next 2 weeks, like, it is coming. And the honest truth is that there's a few of you sitting in this room probably right now that next year at this time, we will all be sitting here, but not you, because you are going to die in the next few months. Ain't you glad you came to Grace today? That's like Death Sunday. Sorry. But the thought of death, it just kind of freaks us out. Like, it just bothers a lot of us. Like, it just doesn't sit that well with us. But for those who are really Jesus followers, which is not everybody in this room by any means, all right, but those of us who have given their lives over to Jesus, made that decision in our life, God makes it very, very, very clear that death will be a part of our life, but it isn't something that we need to fear. And we see this all the way back. I think one of the best examples is the beginning of the church. So let's walk back to that. 2,000 years ago. All right, 2,000 years ago, roughly around 33 AD, Jesus is arrested and he's killed by the religious leaders and the Romans, who kind of own the world at this point in history. And 3 days later, Jesus starts appearing to people. I mean, he does not stay dead. And so he comes back from the dead. He starts appearing to groups of people and some people one-on-one. At one point, he appears to over 500 people in one room at the same time. And so he does this roughly for around 40 days until he meets with his guys the very last time. And on that occasion, what he ends up doing is he tells them, right, he says, hey, here's the deal. I'm leaving you, right? I'm going to send you a helper, and I want you guys to go and tell as many people as possible about what I have done for you. That I died, yes, but I did not stay dead, and I actually defeated death, and in that, I actually paid for everybody's sin, and now I offer everyone, it doesn't matter their race, it doesn't matter what they look like, how dumb they are, how smart they are. He's like, it doesn't really matter. All right, I offer everyone forgiveness and hope. And he starts this thing that we call church. Now, what's the church? The church, just to kind of define that for you, right? The church is just a bunch of Jesus followers doing life together, meeting at least once a week to pray and learn about what God is actually like through what we now call the Bible, while trying to save as many people around us as we can, all right? That's what the church is, and we still do that here today. It has not changed. And so the news about Jesus from that point on, because his guys decide to obey him and do what he tells them to do, news about Jesus, it spreads from Jerusalem, which was kind of the epicenter of where all this stuff went down, to all the surrounding regions, and eventually throughout the entire Roman Empire. And as news spreads, more and more people, they give their lives to Jesus. But it comes with a cost. See, as more and more people give their lives to Jesus, the Roman government and the religious leaders, they try harder and harder and harder to shut it down. And new Christians are being arrested, they're being thrown in prison. Many of them are being killed simply because they believe that Jesus was God and that Jesus saved them. And this happens for years. In fact, a few years goes by, and that brings us to Acts chapter 12. It says it's about that time that King Herod, by the way, King Herod, king is really just a title. We view king as somebody who has a kingdom. Herod did not have a kingdom. Herod basically was a governor under the Roman Empire. So he worked for Caesar and he governed this region that included Jerusalem. It says about that time, King Herod, he violently attacked some who belonged to the church. So people like us. He says, and then he executed James, John's brother, with a sword. Now, who's James? James was one of the disciples. He was actually one of like the top three. Remember the top three that were like James, Peter, and John? And these were the ones that Jesus kind of confided in the most. And that's James. James was the one. He actually gets killed first. And it's Herod who kills him, and he kills him with a sword. It says, when he saw that when he killed James, that it pleased the Jews, meaning the religious leaders specifically and the religious Jews, he proceeded to arrest Peter too. All right, so what do we got going on here? We got this guy named Herod. Herod decides, he's governor of the land. He decides to get in on the kill all the Jesus followers bandwagon. And so he kills James. The religious leaders love it. And so he's like, man, I'm going to keep this going. People love me for it. My next target is Peter. And so he arrests Peter to kill him next. It says, so when Peter was kept in prison, but the church was praying fervently for God or to God for him. It says, when Herod was about to bring him out for trial, that very night, Peter, who was bound with two chains, was sleeping between two soldiers while the sentries in front of the door guarded the prison. All right, so picture this real quick in your minds. Here's Peter. The night before he is about to be killed, he is locked up in prison, chained down, stuck between two soldiers, and he is sleeping. All right, now, I don't know about you, but I have trouble sleeping at night over like dumb stuff. You know what I mean? Like, here's Peter. He's about to die the next day, and he's having trouble. He's not having trouble sleeping at all. Like, I have trouble sleeping if, like, sometimes I see one of your dumb Facebook posts, and I don't like it, and I'm like, should I comment? Should I just, like, let it go? Should I not? All right, should I pray about this person, or should I just delete Facebook because then it'll make my life way, 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 way better? You know, like, those are my options as I'm laying there at night trying to figure out this stuff. All right, but here, Peter, he's about to die the very next day, and he is conked out. I mean, he is sleeping. And this is a very, very, very different Peter than we've seen in the New Testament, at least up until this point. All right, you remember, let's go back just a few years. Remember Jesus' last night before he is arrested and killed on the cross? What he does is he kind of gets his boys together. They go up, they have this big old like meal up in this second story room of someone's house, and they're up there, and he's trying to like give them kind of lasting instructions. He knows he's gonna die. They have no clue. Peter has no clue. And at one point, Jesus, he just kind of like just says it. And I don't know if it's like he couldn't hold it in anymore or it bothered him so much. He just says, hey, one of you guys are going to betray me. And it bothers me. And everybody goes around the table because they're out, they're having dinner. Everybody goes around the table. They're like, man, it's not me. No way. Like, they're all the same. They're all like, no, I would never do that. Jesus, what are you saying? No way. None of us would ever do that to you. And Peter, just because he's kind of a loudmouth, he stands up and he kind of points to everybody. He's like, no way. Ain't me, Jesus. I'd never do that. Like, I could see some of these other guys doing it, but not me. All right, I don't care if all these other fools are afraid. I'm not afraid to even die for you if I have to. Like, that's how far I'm willing to go for you, Jesus. And remember what Jesus says? Jesus looks over at Peter. He's like declaring this thing, like, look at me. Like, you guys might, but not me. I'm strong. I'm not afraid. And he just looks over at Peter and he says, Peter, you have so much fear in you that you're actually going to deny that you even know who I am before the alarm clock goes off tomorrow. And that kind of shuts Peter up for a second. But he's like, no, you got your facts wrong, Jesus. No way. I would never do that. Like, why are you embarrassing me like that? No way, Jesus. And then just a few hours later, what happens? All right, Jesus, they leave that room. He kind of gave them all the advice and all the instructions that he was able to. And Jesus goes, he's like, before he gets arrested, he's like, I just need to pray. I need to talk to the Father. And so he goes, they actually go across this valley into this garden. I was there last week, so just throw that out there, okay? And it's basically, we think of a garden, but it's really just an olive grove of trees. And he goes in there, and Jesus starts praying. If you remember, Jesus asked three of his disciples to come in and, like, pray further into the garden, not necessarily with him, but kind of close by him. And he asked Peter, James, and John. By the way, the same James that Herod just killed. And so they go in, and they're praying, at least for a little while, but it's kind of late, and Jesus is just like, hey, guys, I really, really, really need you tonight. I need you to pray for me. You don't understand what's about to go down, but stuff's about to go down. And so you guys, I really need you to pray. And they're like, oh, yeah, Jesus, we got you. We pray all the time. We're good Christian people. And they start praying, and they fall asleep. Jesus has to come wake them up three different times. I mean, this is like big old tough, like, you know, fearless Peter can't even stay awake for Jesus. And that last time that Jesus comes and wakes him up, Peter wakes up and there's a mob of people coming to arrest Jesus. And remember what Peter does? All right, he, like, I don't know what he was thinking. Like, he whips out his sword and he goes to cut off a guy's head and he misses and he only cuts off the guy's ear. And Jesus kind of looks at him. He's like, really, Peter? Like, really? Like, seriously? He picks up that guy's ear. He puts it back on his head. And then they arrest Jesus, and Peter, he runs away. I mean, he does the exact thing that he promised Jesus he would never do just a few hours before. And then Peter, he ends up following in the distance. Right, kind of sneaking around. He's following the crowd that has Jesus arrested, and they're punching Jesus and all the stuff. And he's like following in the shadows and in the dark. Why? Because he's afraid. He is afraid to die. He doesn't want to die. And at this point, if you're on team Jesus, it sure looked like you were going to die. And within the next few hours, Peter, he denies that he even knows who Jesus is. He has three different people, not once, not twice, but three times. People come up and they're like, hey, weren't you with Jesus? And he's like, no, man, I never even heard of that guy. Who are you talking about? Who's Jesus? By the way, one of those times was to a middle school girl. Like, no offense to you middle school girls out there. But like, this dude, he kind of carries himself like a man. Man, fear of death owned this guy. Then the next day, Jesus was killed. And Peter, he doesn't go out in the streets and start saying, wow, I can't believe you guys did this, start preaching to people. No, what Peter does is he goes and he hides in a home and locks the doors for the next few days because he's afraid he will be killed just like Jesus. I mean, this dude right here, he talked a big game, but behind the curtain, fear of death paralyzed him. Now, fast forward a few years. Here Peter is. Death is on his doorstep. I mean, this is the night before he's going to be publicly killed, probably just weeks after they had killed one of his best friends in James. And Peter is sleeping. And it got me thinking this week. I'm like, man, what changed? Like, what changed in this guy? And it's the same Peter, same world, same risk, same danger. The difference is, I think, was Jesus' resurrection. Right? Like Peter, in between those two times, he had seen something that made fear of death lose its grip on his life. And what I think that was is I think he saw Jesus die and then he saw him alive again. And I think that changed him. You know, to me, I've never had this happen before. I don't know. I've never been in this position. But once you've had breakfast with someone who walked out of their own tomb, like I'm just thinking you stop being afraid of yours. That was Peter. So here's Peter, sleeping in prison. Execution scheduled for tomorrow. And suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared. And a light shone in the cell, striking Peter on the side. And I was looking this up, striking. This isn't like angel of the Lord like goes up and he's like, hey there, little guy. You know, how you doing? You doing okay? You know, comforting him. No, this is actually like a punch. Like he like whacks him. He like punches him in his side of his face. And he's like, wake up. He says, quick, get up. And the chains fell off Peter's wrists. He says, get dressed and put on your sandals. And so Peter did. And he says, wrap your cloak around you, he told him, and follow me. Come with me. You're coming with me, Peter. And so he went out and he followed because he had nothing else to do. And he did not know that what the angel did was really actually happening, but he thought he was seeing a vision, meaning Peter thinks he's dreaming here. He's like, man, this ain't real life, okay? This ain't, you know, I know I'm in prison, but, you know, this is a cool dream. I'm good with it. He says, after they had passed the first and second guards, they came to the iron gate that leads into the city, which opened to them by itself, and they went outside, and they passed one street, and suddenly the angel left him. And so when the angel leaves, Peter finds himself standing in the middle of the street in the middle of the night, and that's the point that he finally realizes. He's like, oh, man. He's like, this for real, all right? Like, God saved me. What is going on here? And so what Peter does is as soon as he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, who was called Mark, where many had assembled and were praying. Now, there's a lot of Marys, a lot of Johns in the Bible, so this specific Mary is not Jesus's mom, Mary, okay? This was Mark's mom, Mary. And Mark, by the way, is the same guy who wrote the book of Mark, okay? Mark was a younger guy, probably was around in Jesus' ministry as maybe a young teenager at this point. So he goes to Mark's mom's house. That's where he goes. And he knocked on the door of the outer gate. And a servant named Rhoda came to answer the door. And she recognized Peter's voice. And because of her joy, she did not open the gate, but instead ran in and announced that Peter was standing at the outer gate. Right, this is probably one of the top three dumbest things done by anybody in the Bible. Right here. Come on, Rhoda. All right, let the guy inside. You know, here's Peter. He just escaped from prison. He's on death row. He's like, you know, in Roman, you know, most wanted or whatever. You know, and the cops and the dogs are going to be on his trail on any moment. And here's Rhoda. He's like at the place where he can find freedom and safety and stuff. And what happens? Rhoda won't let him in. Okay, I don't know what her deal is. Instead, she runs inside because she's so happy that Peter's alive. And she tells everyone, she says, hey, guys, guess what? They're all in like their living room and stuff. They're praying. They're doing their prayer circles, holding hands, you know, all kumbaya, all the things that a good Christian would do as they pray together. And she runs in. She tells everybody, she said, guys, Peter is right outside. And they all run to the front door to let Pete in. No, they don't. They all look at Rhoda and they say, you are out of your mind. Girl, you are out of your mind. But she kept insisting that it was true. They're like, no, she's like, no, go look. He's out there. No, I know Peter. He's out there. And they're like, well, even if you think you saw him, maybe you think you saw him, but it was probably his angel, meaning it's probably his ghost, they think. See, they fear that Peter had already been dead or had already been killed. I mean, think about the scenario here real quick. What's going on? Here's these group of Christians. They're spending all night praying that God would set Peter free. They're all doing their thing, all the good Christian stuff. They're praying, God, please, please save Peter. Don't let him die. Give him more time. You know, all the things. But their fear of Peter's death is so strong that when they hear that Peter is right outside, by the way, is the exact thing that they were at that moment praying for, they automatically assume that either, number one, Rhoda is crazy or that she saw his ghost because he's probably already dead and God couldn't possibly answer their prayer. Isn't that crazy to you? Isn't that just weird, the whole situation? And like these people, these are like the best Jesus followers out there. Like these are going to be the leaders of the new church.
These are the people that God is going to build his church off of, and they are completely controlled by fear. So let me just say, if you struggle with fear a little bit, maybe a little faith, I'm just saying you can make a good Christian someday, because that seems to be present in all of us. I don't know why that is. See, that's us sometimes. You might be sitting in here and you're like, man, I've been a Christian for a long time. Like, I believe in all the things. I believe in Jesus and I believe in heaven and all that stuff. But the honest truth is we just have this fear of death or dying. And maybe it's not even for ourselves. Maybe it's for someone that we love and that we care about. I mean, parents, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like, remember how it was when you take your first kid home that first time? Now you're like, man, it's kind of crazy that it'll let you do that, because you're like, I don't know what to do with this. You know, I don't know if I could keep this thing alive. Like, really, that's all it's trying to do, is like, I just got to keep this thing alive. And it seems like you should, you know, you're like, is there a class or something I should take on this? Or got some video I should be watching? Because there's like more paperwork to get a dog than there is to take home a kid. I don't know why that is, but it's just true. But for me, sometimes I would like wake up at night and it'd be like, you know, quiet. And for me, it was Toby. Toby, he'd be in his like thing. I don't know what it's called, like sleeping thing over in the corner of our room. And I wake up at night and be quiet. And I'd be thinking to myself, I'm like, that kid's still breathing? I'm in trouble if that kid's not breathing. Like, what is that? Is that kid still alive? Hey, parents, you ever do this? Okay, I'm the only one who cares about my kid. Okay, that's cool. I won't tell your kids. Anyway, and I'm like laying there, and I'm like, nah, he's fine. Like, everything's good. I need to stop freaking out. But then you start thinking, you're like, well, it's like worst case scenario type stuff starts running through your mind. You're like, well, what if he's like turning blue in the corner? I don't even know. Like, I could save him if he, you know. And so what I do is I get out of bed, and I'd be like, he's probably fine, but just to make sure, because I'm like afraid. And I walk over there and I look at him, and I'd have to like get down real close, because Kate would have him wrapped up so tight. I couldn't even believe that he could breathe in the first place, and how she had him like stuck in the thing. And he's all wrapped up, and I'm like getting close. I'm like, I think I hear something, you know. I think I see him moving a little bit. Once you get like a shirt of that, you're like, then it completely changes from like, is he okay? Like, should I touch him? Should I wake him up? Then it's like, do not touch this kid. Get out of here. Do not wake this kid up. Like, it instantly flips in your mind. And you try to get out of there as fast as you can. See, we have this fear that the worst possible thing that could happen will happen. And these church people are doing the same thing. That's what fear is. Peter, however, he's stuck outside in the street waiting to get arrested again. He kept on knocking. And when they opened the door finally and they saw him, they were amazed. And they start shouting and they start going crazy. They start like, you know, hallelujah, you know, all the things. And they just can't believe it. I mean, here is Peter somehow went from death row to the front door in the middle of the night. And they are going nuts. And Peter, he's like, whoa, everybody just shut up. You know, he's motioning them to them with his hand to be silent. And then he rushed inside and he's like, shut up. Everybody quiet, you know. And then he starts to describe to them how the Lord had brought him out of the prison. And so Peter rushes inside. And he's just like, guys, it was crazy. You wouldn't believe what just happened. He's like, so here's the deal. Like, I was in prison, and there was a guard on my right and a guard on my left, and there's soldiers everywhere. And I knew that I was going to die, like, tomorrow, kind of like how James died a few weeks ago. But I refused to fear it. I was ready for it. I'm ready to go. And I just went to sleep. And they're like, Peter, you were sleeping? He's like, yeah, I was sleeping. It was some good sleep, too. It was actually pretty good. And then he's like, but then I woke up in the middle of the night, and there's, like, angel kicking me in the rib. And I was like, what the heck is that? What's the deal here? And then I thought it was a dream, but it actually wasn't a dream. And he told me to get up. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'll get up. And then when I got up, it was crazy, guys. You wouldn't believe it. The chains just fell off my wrist. And so I followed this guy. I put on my coat and I walked past all the guards, and every single guard happened to be sleeping just like I was sleeping. And I knew in that moment that if they catch me, that they'd kill me right on the spot, but I didn't fear it. I just obeyed anyway. And I remember looking down that hall and that gate was closed. But I didn't let that stop me. I got to the gate with the angel, and I must have had one of them sensor things, like at Kroger or something, because it just swung right open when I got there, and I just walked right on through, and I quickly ran here, and then I got here, and Rhoda, she wouldn't let me in. I don't know what that's all about. Like, I could have been caught. Come on, Rhoda. And he's like, that's what happened. It was crazy. And he is going on and on and on, and this time, on this night, Peter's saved. Meanwhile, the next morning, there was a great commotion among the soldiers as to what had become of Peter. I bet there was. They're all just like, what is going, what, where'd he go? Yeah, you had him last. No, I had him last. No, he was with you. I saw him. They're all blaming each other and stuff. And after Herod had searched the whole prison, like the whole place, they did not find him. And he interrogated and questioned the guards. And then he ordered their execution instead. And I think Peter's probably feeling pretty good right about this point. But what Peter and the first Jesus followers didn't realize was that for the next 300 years, dying for their faith was going to become normal. In fact, I was wondering this week, I'm like, isn't it interesting? Why did God save Peter but not James? I don't have the answer to that. God doesn't owe us another minute. We don't deserve another minute. And from that point on, what we see is that many Christians would fearlessly face death because this was going to be a normal, routine thing. And I've told you guys this before. I've read up on this a lot just because it interests me. You know, not only is it kind of gruesome, and for some reason I'm drawn to that. That's a problem for me, okay? I work on that. But some of it is just like, I respect these people so much that went before us, that died so that I could know the truth, so that I could be saved, that it makes me proud of them. And so I've read so many times, I've told you guys this before, that many, many, many Christians during this first 300 years, I mean, they were burned at the stake alive. I mean, some of them, they would cut their heads off. I mean, others, they would break their legs and then throw them off buildings. I mean, the Romans in general were professionals at torturing people, of making death as painful as they possibly could. In fact, sometimes what they would do with Christians is they would get Christians on the brink of death by torturing them so much, and then they would nurse them back to life for a few weeks, and then they would do it all over again. They would do that cycle over and over and over again. They wouldn't let them die. They'd break out their teeth. They would pull their eyes out. They'd fillet their skin right off of their bodies. I mean, arms and legs would be pulled out of their sockets, and then they would be stretched on a rack for days until they died. I mean, this is the kind of thing that Christians had to go through. Even Peter, just a few years after this, God's not going to save him. Even then, he's going to be nailed to a cross upside down. I remember there's a story that I read years ago, and I've shared this with you guys before because this kind of stuck with me, and I know it stuck with some of you because some of you guys have told me, but I remember reading about a mom and a son, a young son, who was caught because they were Christians, and what they ended up doing is they tortured the mom, and they would tell her, and a lot of times the Romans would do this, they would say, hey, we will let you go. All you have to do is deny that Jesus is God. Just do that. I'm sure he'll forgive you. It's not going to be that big of a deal. Just do that, and we'll let you go free. And they'd stop. But she refused because she couldn't live like that. And they realized that they weren't getting anywhere with her, with torturing her. And so what they did was they took her kid, and it was a son. He was probably around 10 years old or so. And they started slowly killing him in front of her. And instead of screaming and yelling and saying, okay, I'll do whatever you want or whatever, right? She didn't do any of that. What she did, and this is what has stuck with me for so many years, is she looked into her son's eyes and she said, look at me. As they're torturing him to death, and she tells him flat out, she says, here's the deal, you are going to die, but it's okay. It's going to be over soon. Look at me, stay focused on me. You're going to die. It's going to be okay. It's going to be over soon. I will see you soon. All right, this is going to be one of the best days of your life because you are going to meet Jesus. It's going to happen soon. Hang in there, stay brave, be tough, you know, stay strong. Look at me, it's going to be okay. Until he died. And then they killed her. That, as a Christian, that's our heritage. It's because of people like that wouldn't shut up about Jesus. They wouldn't stop telling the people that they cared about the great news, about what Jesus has done for them, that they can find hope only in him. It's because of people like that makes it possible that we are here today. Because they spread the story. They kept the story going. They wouldn't shut up about Jesus. And I am so thankful for that. They did not fear death. And as Jesus followers, we are not to fear death either. Paul, he once writes, he says, for the Christian, all right, I'll paraphrase this. He says, for the Christian, to live is good. All right, to live is following Jesus, doing what Jesus tells us to do, you know, working for him. That's all great. Then he says, but to die is better. And so for you, the next time fear creeps in your life, whether you're stuck in a tent surrounded by bears, all right, in the middle of the Pennsylvania mountains, or you're lying awake in your own bed thinking about the reality that death is coming for you. Or maybe it's not even about you. Maybe it's about the death of someone that you love, that you care about. Maybe what will help you is just remembering Peter asleep in that cell. See, I don't think Peter was fearless because he was brave necessarily. I think he was fearless because he was ready. And we should be ready. Looking forward to the future life. And just say, if you're not ready or if you're not sure where you stand with the whole Jesus thing, man, you got to figure that out. Maybe you should fear death. But for those of us who have made that decision to give our lives over to him, there's no reason to be afraid. We should be ready, looking forward to our future life. Because the one who conquered death is the same one who has decided your end. And like Peter, we can find rest in that. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words in this story. And God, it's crazy to think that that's all true. That actually really happened. We thank you for that. God, we ask that you would help us, those of us in here that we've given our lives over to you, that we would not fear death. You have not called us to fear death. In fact, that's the most commanded command in all the Bible, is you say, don't be afraid. But we live our lives in fear. We live our lives afraid about all these things that could happen. And it stops us from doing what you have called us to do. God, give us boldness. Help us to be brave. Help us to have real courage. To live the life that you've called us to live. Knowing that living life is good, but to die is better. Lord, we thank you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.